Good morning. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9 minutes after 6 o'clock, and I'm Gene Purcell, here today filling in for Joy Cardine. It is no secret that the airline industry has been facing some difficult times lately. Bankruptcies, mergers, high fuel prices, the list goes on. They have all combined to change the way that airline business is done. But it's also been a pretty tough time for air travelers as well. The planes are crowded, the flights are fewer, and the meals are rarely found. Add it all up, and getting there, whether it's for business or for pleasure, has turned most routine travel into an ordeal. And the evidence isn't just anecdotal, although there is plenty of that. A new report out this week has some bad news regarding on-time performance for the airline industry. And it turns out that some of the blame is with the airline industry. Some of the blame, though, lies in other areas, including what is called an antiquated air traffic control system. Our guest this hour will help shed some light on the current state of air travel. Daryl Jenkins is an aviation consultant and a professor of aviation at The Ohio State University. What has your experience been with air travel lately? Has it been good, average, or just plain bad? Where are the airlines at in your book? And is it fair to pick on the airlines when a lot of consumers just want to travel on the cheap? Would you pay extra to be on time or to have a bigger seat? And if so, how much are you willing to pay? Call with your comments and questions for our guest. Our toll-free number is 800-642-1234. And if you're calling from the Madison area, the local number is 263-1890. Don't forget, you can also join us by email. Our address is talk@wpr.org. Daryl Jenkins, good morning. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Good morning, young man.
Well, it's good to have you along. And first of all, your reaction to the report just came out, I think, in the last day or two. On-time performance is down. There's some other issues floating around out there. Is this a big surprise from where you sit?
No, not at all. In the last couple of years, the airlines have cut back significantly. I think the truth of the matter is they're really not sure right now how many employees it does take to run their current level of operations. And I think you're going to see this continue for another year or so until the airlines figure out how to make money in this new environment.
And this new environment caused by a whole lot of factors, but over the past couple of years, a lot of turmoil in the airline industry. And as you say, a lot of action, apparently, particularly on the employee front, Northwest just emerging from bankruptcy. And other changes are continuing to be talked about in the airline industry. Also here in Wisconsin, proposed merger between Midwest and AirTran. Is this sort of thing going to calm down anytime soon?
I doubt that the airline industry will calm down until we're all pretty much comfortably dead. I've been involved in this for a long time now, and the level of change is accelerating, and I think it will continue in the near to medium future for sure.
And so when you say the level of change is accelerating, what's that mean for air travelers?
Well, I think that we're going to see on the air traveler side a great level of discomfort, especially during the times of the year when, for example, June, our mm-hmm. current month. June's the month that we have the most thunderstorms. A thunderstorm in an airplane is totally and completely incompatible. Now, think about it. Right now, planes are about 85% full on average. So that means that if your flight is canceled for any reason whatsoever, it would take at least another 4 or 5 flights after that to accommodate all the passengers that were displaced by that just that one single flight. So we have kind of this ripple effect that any time a flight is canceled for any reason whatsoever, another 4 or 5 flights are probably affected by it at least, and we may see another 3 or 4 flights canceled because of that. So when a big thunderstorm comes through a region, for example, Chicago here, it may take us a day or two to get the planes, the crews, and the passengers back to the point where they should be.
And as we look at this report, there are a lot of figures tossed around in there, and the biggest one that was tossed around, at least the lead story or the lead sentence in the stories that I saw, had to do with on-time performance of airlines. That is down as well. And the question I have for you is how much attention should we as consumers pay to that particular figure? Does it really mean anything?
Well, I'm not so sure. We have a 14-minute, more or less, variance around that. So the average plane's delayed about 30, 40 minutes, something like that. I don't think those types of delays bother people whatsoever. I think they're used to them. I mean, we've all been flying so long. We all know that there's a certain level of unreliability in all of this. And so I think that type of a delay people can take without too much frustration. Once or twice a year when we have these exaggerated delays and excessively long delays, I think those are the things that are kind of the breaking point in the whole system, and those are the things that we hear about for the rest of the year.
And you might be referring to, was it the JetBlue incident a couple months ago when everything just broke down?
Yeah, JetBlue has been growing very, very fast, really outgrew their own level of operations. Operating an airline is extremely difficult. We have almost no slack in the system whatsoever on either the side of the airline, the air traffic control system, or the airport. So all three components are pretty much have no slack whatsoever. A study was done by the MITRE Corporation, which is an FAA think tank, a number of years ago, and they showed that in the afternoon, planes coming across the North Atlantic into Newark, which is Continental's main hub on the East Coast, if there are only four planes out of position and during the afternoon push, it can delay as many as 200 other planes. You have a big plane, creates an enormous amount of wake turbulence, and so you have to space them very carefully, and you increase spacing between them and the smaller planes coming in the land. So if you only have just a small glitch in the system, it has enormous backup possibilities all through the system.
We're talking about air travel with our guest, Daryl Jenkins, an aviation consultant and a professor of aviation at The Ohio State University. And we are talking specifically in reference to a new report out this week indicating that on-time performance for airlines are down and that the forecast, the short-term forecast in any case for the summer, does not look good if you are planning on traveling by air. Joining the conversation, our toll-free number, 800-642-1234. And if you call from Madison, it is 263-1890. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm in for Joy Cardine this morning here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 18 minutes past 6 o'clock. Coming up after 7, we take a look at why wine is threatening beer as the nation's most popular alcoholic drink. This hour, we are talking about air travel with our guest, David Jenkins, an aviation consultant and professor of aviation at The Ohio State University. And we're talking about it because of a report that came out that you probably read about, particularly if you're someone who flies a lot. On-time performance of U.S. airlines are down, and there are other challenges facing the airlines as we head into the summer travel season, and those will come back and directly affect you. If you'd like to join in, we've got a couple of open lines for you at 800-642-1234. In Madison, it is 263-1890. You can also join us by email. If you're stuck in an airport, call us at talk@wpr.org. Daryl Jenkins, before the break, you were talking about the lack of slack in the system. And using an example of if four planes sort of get out of whack in the course of things, it can really mess up the whole day. And that's important when you think about how many planes are taking off and landing throughout the course of the day. I read a figure, and it was something like 40,000. It was a huge figure, and I knew it was big. I guess I didn't realize it was quite that big.
An airline is an enormous operation, and trying to run an airline and just keep your daily schedule going is an incredible amount of work. It's so much work, in fact, that airlines have few resources left after they've run their schedule to look at the future and try to decide better ways to run their operations. In all of this restructuring that we've seen in the airline industry, one of the few things that we've seen is an airline carefully look at how it manages and runs its operation. And I think going forward, that's going to be one of those points that airlines are going to spend more and more intellectual time on than they have in the past. We're at a point right now with the price of jet fuel and everything else that we can no longer be as cavalier about how we run our airline as we were in the past.
And what role do consumers play in all of this? This was a couple months ago I read this, that one of the problems or one of the issues airlines face is that consumers are only willing to pay X number of dollars for a flight, And so there's a lot of price pressure on them in that fashion as well.
Well, there is a lot of price pressure on airlines. It can be managed, however, a lot better if they pull in the number of flights and the number of seats that they're offering. One of the ways that, and this is, you were talking about mergers earlier, mm-hmm. one of the ideas that has circulated in the industry since as far back as I can remember is that there will come a certain time when all the major airlines are going to merge down into two or three large airlines. Now, the thought there is that if you reduce capacity, you also reduce competition and you gain more pricing power. Of course, government's going to have something to say in something like this. But at the same time, the idea is, and I believe the fundamental idea is correct, that if we watch and control our product level and how much product we're offering, we do, in fact, have more control over our pricing than if we just let it go wild, as the airlines have done in the past.
Has anything good come out of restructuring, of this airline restructuring that we've seen over the past few years? Because, you know, as consumers, we're faced with more delays and what seems like a much worse system than we had before. But as you sit there and watch the industry from a more long-term viewpoint, what is the good that's going to come out of all this?
Well, I think the good is that in terms of the level of service that we should expect, we're probably seeing reality right now for the first time. So the level of service that we're currently at, levels of staffing are going to fluctuate around this, probably what the long-term reality is. And so I think as consumers, if they do view this as just the real thing now, I think they will also adjust their expectations along those lines as well.
So I think the good news is this is as bad as it's going to get.
Something like that.
Okay. One of the other issues that was brought up in a number of articles I read about, and this has been talked about for years, but the FAA's sort of air traffic control system being antiquated and contributing part of the problems that airlines are facing. Mm-hmm. Talk a bit about that, if you would, because, again, that's that sort of invisible net behind the scenes there that consumers just don't see much of.
Well, we're in a real interesting situation here in that the government supplies really pretty much all of the infrastructure for moving the airplanes through the airspace. It is an old system. It is very antiquated. It's antiquated in the sense that it has no flexibility built into it. This summer, when the FAA announced that during heavy thunderstorms that they'd give airlines alternate routings around those, it was the first time I've seen any flexibility in this system whatsoever. 15 years ago, the airlines and the FAA didn't even talk about matters. It's only been really in the last five or six, under Jane Garvey's administration, they began kind of this collaborative decision-making process where the FAA and the airlines on a daily basis would have a couple conference calls, and they would at least share information with each other about weather and things like this. So the FAA is an organization that I think only a mother could love. It has some really inherent problems with it, and certainly its ability to buy automation and to manage automation whatsoever has been very, very poor indeed.
And given all of that, and really given the complexity of implementing a new system, do you anticipate something on the horizon, obviously not soon, but 5 years, 10 years?
No.
Okay, there it is, really, that bad.
I hate to be the one to just simply pound on them, but the truth is that we will have nothing really all that radically new in 5 years, and I doubt that we'll have it in 10 years as well.
Let's go to the phones right now. We've got some callers who would like to join in. We've got room for you if you'd like. 800-642-1234 is our toll-free number. If you're calling from Madison, it is 263-1890. Betsy joins us now, and Betsy is in River Falls. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. I would like a point of clarification. About two or three years ago, on either Wisconsin Public Radio or Democracy Now!, I heard that the airlines had to pay huge sums of money to the federal government for terrorist protection insurance fees or something like that. And I wondered then, and I haven't found anyone to ask since, is this indeed the case, and is this might be part of the problem why they're having such trouble if they're paying these huge fees to our federal government? Please and thank you.
Oh, sure. Thanks for the call. And Daryl Jenkins, I don't know about huge fees, but certainly terrorism, dealing with that from the airline's perspective, has had to have had an impact.
Part of the price of a ticket does go to the Transportation Security Agency. The airlines would call it huge. TSA would probably call it minuscule. So I guess it's a matter of point of reference. But the young lady who called it, and it's indeed fact that the airlines do pay fees.
And I know they had to do other things, too, you know, strengthen doors and some smaller things like that that still did add up. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if, in the scheme of things, how much that really adds to the burden that airlines are bearing. If you had to pick one area right now that would be difficult for airlines to deal with, what would it be in terms of price? I mean, for me, it seems to be that the fuel situation would be the one, but is there something else that I'm missing?
No, I think you've nailed it there, kiddo. Jet fuel 10 years ago was about 15% of operating expenses. Now it's about 30%, so it's doubled in the last 10 years. That's an enormous increase in terms of absolute levels. So jet fuel is pretty much the a game breaker on all of this. And the problem with it going forward is just the enormous amount of uncertainty surrounding the price.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of it's difficult to buy in the futures. It's difficult to know how many planes to have in the air, all that sort of thing. I mean, it really, you talked about a ripple effect before. This is a ripple effect that can cause you know, some pretty big waves.
It is indeed. Matter of fact, looking forward, if you're planning new routes out there and the price of jet fuel goes up unexpectedly by 10%, that new route you're flying could all of a sudden become unprofitable very, very quickly. So I think jet fuel is certainly the biggest problem out there right now and the uncertainty surrounding it.
Have there been any studies done sort of on the attitudes of consumers in the middle of all this? We see the, you know, the dry government reports with on-time rates. I can guess what a report on consumers might say, but is there anything out there where airlines are trying to keep track of what customers are saying about them?
I've actually been able to follow a lot of the consumer research in airlines for the last 20 years. I really think that after 9/11, people readjusted their expectations. So as the airlines have actually gotten worse in just about everything, the level of consumer satisfaction has not dropped proportionately with how bad the airlines are performing. It's dropped. You know, they're madder than they have been before. But I think their expectations in terms of what they're going to receive and you know, an understanding that TSA has kind of imposed upon them have kind of dampened a little bit of their dislike of the airlines.
And I have to say, as I travel more, you know, people have just gotten used to taking off their shoes and their belts. It's a ritual now, and people don't even complain about it.
One of the problems that we've had with the TSA is managing expectations. So every time they kind of change their rules and they change them drastically, it causes an enormous amount of discomfort. If they would just kind of work at a high level of security and require certain things all the time, so every aspect of going through security were a constant, then people would adjust their expectations with it. But we see all these different levels of security, and so one day it's very high and the next day it's lesser. I think that's really part of the problem. I think consumers are perfectly capable of adjusting to change as long as, you know, there's some...
And I'm afraid we're going to have to hold it right there. I won't forget the topic when we come back, though.
Okay.
This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. It's 25 minutes before 7 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And I'm Gene Purcell, filling in today for Joy Cardine. We're talking about air travel with our guest this hour about in response to a report published earlier this week on air travel in the U.S., a report indicating that the on-time performance rates for airlines are down, and all sorts of other issues that will affect air travelers this summer are largely up. Daryl Jenkins is our guest, an aviation consultant and professor of aviation at The Ohio State University. And Daryl Jenkins, before the break, we were talking about the TSA and some of the expectations they have, some of the security expectations that change from day to day, and really do help to frustrate, I think, the experience of travelers. The shampoo or the liquid thing a couple months back was the one that kind of caught me by surprise.
I think it caught everyone. by surprise, and it really took us 6 or 7 months to get passengers to the change on some of those things, and the TSA finally started bringing things like that to the bags to the line and assisting people. People got to the airport one day, and all of a sudden the rules had changed. And the rules had changed drastically, and nobody was aware of this, and it took an enormous amount of time to get people to change their behavior on that.
Let's bring Adam into the discussion right now. Adam joins us from Milwaukee, and good morning.
Good morning, Gene. How are you doing today?
Good, thanks.
Bill, here's my thoughts. You know, after 9/11, I guess my expectations for the airlines, you know, I've had a lot of sympathy for them. You know, I think they've had a lot of hardships to deal with, and as you were talking about the price of jet fuel has gone up as well. When I look at TSA, I kind of view them, you know, in a whole separate entity. And, you know, I'm definitely ready to take my shoes off, and I have no problem with that because I want the best security. But also, you know, I just want to make sure that we're holding these guys to extremely high standards because, you know, when it comes to security, these guys are kind of the front runner of weeding out any bad guys that might be wanting to take advantage of the whole process. And I was just curious on what your thoughts are on how they're doing and the level of, I guess, excellence they're achieving.
All right, Daryl Jenkins, we've talked a little bit about changing expectations, but if you look at the TSA, in terms of their overall effectiveness, are they doing better than the airport security we had in 2001?
Well, certainly anything's better than the airport security we had in 2001. Then it was lousy. Even the airlines knew it was lousy and had their own meetings how to improve that, which were drastically changed by the events of 9/11. If I were to criticize TSA on one thing and one thing only, it's that their level security is not constant. Having these different levels where it's higher one day and lower another day is just an incorrect way to do this. If you're going to do it, have one level of security, make that excessively high, and maintain it. Now, the one thing that I think that has added more security to the system than anything else, I guess two things. One, it's the change in attitudes of pilots. Pilots were trained to kind of be passive during what we called at that time a hijacking situation. And statistics show that if they were passive 95% of the time, everybody would get down on the ground and everybody would walk away alive. Well, 9/11 changed that, and airlines and pilots have changed their perceptions of it. So that is really one major thing, because a pilot would be aggressive, and a pilot can be very aggressive in a cockpit because he's at the controls, and he can put that plane in all sorts of unnatural attitudes and make a terrorist life very, very unpleasant indeed. I think the second thing that has given us more security is the change in attitudes of flyers. And we've seen flyers become very aggressive, and they will no longer sit back and put up with the actions of terrorists. And as we saw in the case of United 93, where it was the passengers that took down the terrorists. So I think the change in attitudes of passengers, and I think the change in the attitude of pilots, are the two things that have given us the most increase in security.
And those changes, for better or for worse, do appear to be permanent. I mean, there's always, you know, there's always a big event that happens, and then people are excited for a while, and the effect sort of wears off. But in this case, it doesn't seem that that's going to happen.
No, not at all. So I think those are the two biggest changes. And certainly having a larger security presence at the airport is good. I do not think that TSA in and of itself is an impediment to the airlines going forward. I think some of their changing policies, though, are.
800-642-1234 is the toll-free number that you can use if you'd like to join in the conversation. We're talking about airline travel this morning with our guest, Daryl Jenkins, an aviation consultant and professor of aviation at The Ohio State University. Tom joins us now, and Tom is in Milwaukee. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm actually headed to the airport this morning.
Oh, congratulations.
For a flight to California. I had a couple of questions, actually, that I thought of. One was, how much, because of the performance and the hassles with airlines these days, how much has corporate jetting taken on now? And then the other question I had real quick was, like this trip that I'm taking now to California, I had to book relatively quick for business. The prices weren't that bad. I remember in the 80s paying double the amount for the tickets that I did now. Is there a correlation with them trying or filling the jets more or whatever?
Okay, a couple of complicated questions, I think. Let's start with the corporate jet question first, Daryl Jenkins. When you travel, you see all sorts of ads for corporate jets and, executives resting comfortably in their planes flying. What is the role of corporate jets these days? Is it getting a lot larger in the scheme of things?
Well, corporate jets have been growing in the last 10, 15 years, but still pretty much a rounding off here in terms of total passengers travel. In terms of number of planes in the air, it's increasing, but in terms of the number of people that it carries, they carry very few per plane. So that part of it, in terms of affecting commercial aviation, I don't know that I see that as a threat to an airline or anything like that. But certainly the role of business jets in the air traffic system, one which is currently being hotly debated and of which there's an enormous amount of controversy over.
Really? Why?
It has to do with how much they pay for the usage of the system. So the Air Transport Association considers every plane up there in the sky pretty much an equal, and so that they should be paying the same amount as they are. Probably a spurious argument on the part of the ATA, but there is at the same time a little bit of truth in what they say.
All right, we'll keep our eyes open on that. The second part of Tom's question had to do with pricing for tickets, saying back in the 80s, if he had to book a last-minute trip, it costs a lot more than it does now. And I guess that's a good thing for consumers. But how did that all shake out like that, where in some cases the prices are lower now than they were then?
Well, I think in terms of absolute terms, they're certainly not lower. Depending on, say, today is Wednesday. Wednesday is the Tuesday and Wednesday are the lowest travel volume days of the week. So those are also the 2 days that you're going to be able to get the best fares. Fares right now are pretty much at a historically high level, not in real terms if you deflate it for inflation. So air travel is indeed a bargain, and as we see prices at the pump go up, I think we're going to continue to see more and more people stay flying, even though it is, in fact, a tad inconvenient.
And, yeah, I want to ask about that because, car prices or gasoline prices have gone up, air travel does look pretty good depending on where you're going. And you call the price a bargain right now. Do you expect that to, I understand with the jet fuel prices, there's a lot of intangibles out there. But do you expect those prices to remain, I don't know if bargain-like is the right term, but something that consumers can afford?
Well, I think they're going to be favorable. Right now, in the last year, airlines have tried to raise prices a number of times unsuccessfully. The previous 2 years, just about every attempt they made was successful. So last year, every price increase that the airlines wanted went through. The year before that, about half of them went through, and the year before that, about a quarter of them went through, and this year, none of them went through. Part of the reason fares haven't been going up this year is just a very, very lackluster economy. And the second part of it is the airlines have just if an airline manager is anything else, an airline manager, despite history, is an optimist. And so every time things look like they're going good, they start increasing capacity by way more than they should, which puts a lot of downward pressure on fares.
All right, more things to watch. Daryl Jenkins is our guest. He is an aviation consultant and a professor of aviation at The Ohio State University. And we are talking about the state of air travel, responding to a report out this week on air travel in the U.S. on time rates. Are going down for U.S. carriers, and there are all other sorts of pressures on airlines right now, and they are affecting folks who have to travel, people just like you. We'll have room for your call after this break, 800-642-1234. If you've got a question for our guest, or if you would just like to share a tale of woe or a success story. You know, a lot of people fly every day and do so successfully, and that sort of gets lost in the equation. If you're calling from Madison, it is 263-1890, and email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Gene Purcell in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 12 minutes before 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell. Coming up after 9 this morning with Kathleen Dunn, Tuesday marked the 40th anniversary of the 1967 Six-Day War. This morning, Kathleen Dunn and her guest remember the landmark conflict and the implications of that today. This hour, we are talking about the implications of air travel. And our guest is Daryl Jenkins, an aviation consultant and professor of aviation at The Ohio State University. And we're responding to a report published this week on the performance of U.S. airlines. On-time performance is the big figure people look at, and that rate is the worst it's been since the government began using its current figures back in 1995. If you'd like to join in the conversation, you can do so. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number. In Madison, it is 263-1890. Daryl Jenkins, before the break, we were talking about air travel, and we're going to continue right now. And one of the things I want to ask about, we were talking about airline prices, and there's a lot of low-cost carriers out there all of a sudden, and a lot of airlines that, you know, 10 years ago we'd never heard of. And I'm wondering right now, if, as you look at the airlines, who are the players in this business? You still think of what are called the legacy airlines right now, but who are the real players? Is it still the people we've always thought of, or are there new, more nimble companies out there?
I think the real player is the consumer, since they have so many choices. Certainly, with the increase of internet distribution of airfares, you know, you can sit down at your home computer and you can see all the fares that are available on every airline for any part of the day at any time that you want. So I think as the internet has grown, I think consumers have benefited from that, and I think they use people are beginning to use these things. My students, who are a different breed of cat than when I was out there, you know, I started out as a travel agent. Everything I did through a travel agent, even when I left the business. But these kids are out there. They pretty much know what's going on. They're doing it themselves, and it's an entirely different world that we have now than it was 10, 15 years ago. The legacy carriers are alive and well. They're doing quite well. They've rearranged their routes. They're much nimbler after emerging from bankruptcy than they were previous to Chapter 11. The low-cost airlines are having some of their own difficulties right now. They're going to reorganize. Next year or so, we're going to have probably a much better structural industry than we've seen in a long time, but still have its long-term problems. And the biggest long-term problem right now, one, is compensation at all levels, not only for labor but for executives. And the second big problem that we have is the price of jet fuel.
Yeah, I want to ask about that compensation question. I was on a flight a couple of weeks ago on a major carrier, and there was a discussion in the back. I was sitting in the back, as I often wind up finding myself at the back of the plane. And the flight attendants were unhappy that day. And there was something wrong with the plane. And they encouraged some of the passengers to take a competitor's airline.
Yeah.
And I thought, my gosh, I mean, they're wearing the uniform, they're in the plane with the paint and everything, and they're telling people, you know, go somewhere else. This isn't such a great airline right now. And I don't know if that was indicative of a larger trend within the industry, but it may get back to that question of compensation you spoke of.
Yeah, and that's basically what I'm talking about. And I could probably tell you the airline you were on, but I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
But it is a problem. Exactly, not all airlines. I mean, Continental, Delta, and some others did. The employee or the executives did not pay themselves big bonuses. But the reason they ended up getting these big bonuses is because everybody else was working at a lower wage level. I mean, that's really kind of the long and short of it. And so you see this income inequality, which is never good, and it's creating an enormous amount of dissent within the ranks, even up through the middle manager levels. So on the one hand, you have to, if they're going to pay themselves big bonuses after everybody else has taken a big cut, then they should also be paying those who took cuts bonuses as well. So if everybody's sharing in the love, so to speak, then I have no problems with it. If just a few are at the expense of the others, you're going to be creating for yourself management problems in the future that you're just not going to be able to run away from. So it's not just the executives' pay, which I'm concerned about. It's the employees' pay as well, as they need to be able to pay their bills and make a living from their efforts. So I think compensation at all levels, and how you compensate not only executives, but the rank and file as well, up through the middle manager levels, is going to be a big, big problem. Certainly going to decrease employee satisfaction. I mean, if you think about it, the flight attendant and the gate agent are two of the lowest paid people in the entire system, and they're the ones who actually get right in front of the passenger and interface with them. So certainly, one way or another, we want to keep gate agents and flight attendants happy. I think if a CEO is able to make enormous amounts of money for the stockholders and things like that, I think they should be rewarded as well. But at the same time, this inequality is not working.
Let's go to Bill now, and Bill joins us from Racine. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. The question I have is, if I want to go somewhere this afternoon, the prices seem to be double to triple the price that if I wanted to go next week. It seems like if you book them in advance, they're quite reasonable. And like you said, you can shop for them. And when you want to go right now or very, very soon, taking up the last couple of seats, whatever is left, they seem to be extremely high. Is there a reason for that?
The reason the last seats are extremely high, and you're correct in your observations, young man, the reason they're high is that if they were very low, then the business traveler, who generally books within the last 3 days, there would be no seats left for them. So you use pricing to allocate scarce materials, and that's the whole long and short of it. So if you're booking far out, you get a lower price. If you're booking closer in, you have a higher price. And if you didn't have that higher price, the business people would not fly in the airplane and just be full of low-paying leisure travelers.
Well, your answer was better than mine, I have to say. Mine was going to be because they can. And that was the whole thing. Let's go to Bruce now, and Bruce joins us from Madison. Good morning, Bruce.
Hi there. Good morning. I've never done this before, so I'm a little nervous.
Okay.
I'm an airline pilot for a regional airline. And I just want to make a comment. I just got done from a trip right now, actually. And a few days ago, I flew Louisville to LaGuardia. We got in at 2:15 in the morning. This is a typical thing. We constantly are delayed going into LaGuardia. I fly a 50-seat regional jet. And I think that part of the problem that we see today is that we have so many small regional jets flying 50-seat aircraft, and yet the demand seems overwhelmingly large, and yet we still try to fly these small little jets, and you can't fly so many flights into places like LaGuardia with these tiny little jets and not expect there to be delays. And so I think this is one of the real reasons why we're having such significant delays, especially on the East Coast.
Bruce, thanks for the call. And Daryl Jenkins, what about that? Is it the number of planes or is it the lack of airport facilities?
Well, it's all of the above, and his observations were interesting, and I think I agree with him for the most part. LaGuardia is a very interesting problem. It's the nearest airport to New York City, one of the largest markets in the world, and everybody wants access to that. So in some ways, what we have here is a political problem, and that every small or medium-sized city wants to have flights into LaGuardia for its constituents. So every congressman out there lobbies to get flights from their city into LaGuardia, which is slot control. And because of this, we have a lot of very, very small planes. Now, if you were strictly in a market economy allocating this, you would expect that LaGuardia would be having larger size planes, bigger than 50 seats, so 75, 100, 150, and things like that. But we don't see this happening. So I think LaGuardia is a real interesting case where Congress has gotten involved in the allocation of scarce resources, and you see a lot of flights going in that are small. Now, on the airline side, I'm pretty sure they don't mind this for a couple reasons. One, if you fly in a fewer number of seats, let's go back to our basic pricing model, the likelihood is that you have more control over your capacity, and so that plane is going to be full of higher paying fares. Okay. Now, the idea is that you would get revenue greater than a cost, and at LaGuardia, you're pretty much always able to do that. So on the airline side, they're not particularly disadvantaged on this because all of those flights are more or less profitable. Okay, the person who's inconvenienced by all of this political maneuvering, which the airlines are using to their advantage, is, of course, the traveler.
And there you are. Well, Darrell Jenkins, we are out of time.
Well, this was a pleasure, young man. Usually when I do these long radio shows, people call in and vet about their last horrible flight. So let me compliment the people in Wisconsin for having a really very interesting discussion.
And thanks for joining us. Darrell Jenkins, an aviation consultant and professor of aviation at The Ohio State University. If you'd like a copy of the program, you can call the radio store at 800-747-7444. And you can also listen online. In our audio archives, you will find those at our website at WPR.org. Leo Duran produced this morning's program, and we had on-air production this hour from Christina Taylor. I'm Gene Purcell in for Joy Cardine today. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.